Hello there. Today is Thursday, March 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, relief efforts are underway after a deadly cyclone leaves thousands in need. Is a trade war between the Trump administration and China any closer to being resolved?
We have to make sure that if we do the deal with China, that China lives by the deal, because they've had a lot of problems living by certain deals.
Also ahead, a rapper gets into the movie business. It's all on today's International Edition. Zimbabwe is retrieving and burying bodies as Mozambique begins 3 days of national mourning for victims of Cyclone Idai. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The full number of cyclone victims and the extent of the damage done will only be known when torrential floodwaters recede. Persistent rains are forecast, so it will be days before the plains of Mozambique drain towards the Indian Ocean. Zimbabwe's president will visit the hard-hit mountain community on the eastern border with Mozambique. Officials say some 300 people may have died in Zimbabwe as a result of the floods. Mozambican officials say its death toll is 200 and rising. A report earlier in the week predicted the full number to be more like 1,000. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Meanwhile, Zimbabweans have started raising funds and donating goods to help those affected by the cyclone. The Red Cross says the storm killed more than 100 people, with many others still missing. Columbus Mahunga in Harare reports.
This church has been turned into a donation center meant to help those affected by the deadly Cyclone Idai. Volunteers receive donations, food, water, blankets and clothes, which are packed up for shipment to eastern Zimbabwe. This 43-year-old man is from the devastated region. He says a former classmate and neighbor, along with the neighbor's wife and three children, were killed when a hill collapsed on them while they slept.
But my elder brother and our family survived. When they saw that's what was about to happen, they quickly escaped. I want to say that the food supplies there and where to stay are a challenge, or even where to buy food. There is nowhere they can buy because the shops are at the steep slopes, so they were destroyed too. I feel quite relieved to be seeing these efforts.
The relief efforts are being coordinated by organizations such as Ignite Youth, which have been on social media asking Zimbabweans to provide relief to cyclone victims.
We plan to give everything that has been collected here to all the victims that have been affected by Cyclone Idai, because we feel that this is the role that we have to play as young people as well, to give back, to help where we can.
Down the road at the Zimbabwe Red Cross, the aid organization has deployed teams to ensure that the injured get medical treatment and that communities have clean drinking water.
Accessibility has been one of the biggest challenges, considering it's in the eastern and mountainous area, and there's been a serious landslides, damaged roads, and accessibility is one of the worst situations.
Kutadzaushe says nearly 100 people have been confirmed dead in the cyclone, with up to 250 others currently missing and up to 600 people displaced from their homes. The Zimbabwe government says it has deployed army engineers to ensure that damaged roads and bridges are repaired so that assistance can reach those who need help. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Christchurch begins burials as memorials continue to grow. Israeli forces reportedly kill a Palestinian in the West Bank. Congo's Ebola outbreak has spread to a city of 1 million. And Nicaragua's government says it will free all jailed protesters. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump told reporters Wednesday that U.S. tariffs on China are likely to remain in place for a while, even if a trade deal is reached. But he also noted that talks are coming along nicely.
No, we're not talking about removing them. We're talking about leaving them and for a substantial period of time, because we have to make sure that if we do the deal with China, that China lives by the deal. Because they've had a lot of problems living by certain deals, and we have to make sure. Now, no president has ever done what I've done with China. China had free rein over our country, taking out $500 billion a year for many years. We actually rebuilt China in the truest sense of the word. We rebuilt China. But we're getting along with China very well. President Xi is a friend of mine. The deal is coming along nicely. We have our top representatives going there this weekend to further the deal. But no, we're taking in billions and billions of dollars right now in tariff money. And for a period of time, that will stay.
The president's remarks indicate even if a trade deal is reached, tariffs imposed by Washington could stay in place until U.S. officials are convinced the Chinese are adhering to the terms of the agreement. Washington and Beijing have slapped hundreds of import duties, and their dispute raises costs. Royals has been roiling financial markets and shrinking U.S. exports and disrupting manufacturing supply chains. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asks Phil Levy, senior fellow on global economy at the Chicago Council on Government Affairs, why he thinks the tariffs need to stay in place.
I don't think they do. I think the president is particularly enamored of tariffs, and he's set himself some conflicting goals, which put him in a very difficult spot. On the one hand, he wants a very quick agreement with the Chinese, and he also wants a very deep agreement. And what we're seeing is the tension between those two.
So what happens next, do you think?
Well, they've talked about an exchange of negotiators, but we've seen that before. Liu He is going to be visiting Washington. That was how they were supposed to avert all this trouble back in May of 2018. So I expect we'll have continued negotiations, and then the president's going to face a difficult choice, which is he will either strike a very limited deal or we will have ongoing tensions.
Well, the ongoing tensions, but is this doable in any way, shape, or form? How do you think, as an expert, that things should go forward or could go forward?
Well, I think we've hurt ourselves with the tariffs, and that's meant a sense of urgency. You've seen that in the reaction to the president's statement, because at the same time he's done this, he's kind of been promising a lot of his supporters, particularly farmers, that this problem's going to get fixed and these are going to go away. Now he's saying, well, maybe it's not going away until China does everything we like for a long time, which is a very different message. I think what we should do is have a more considered and focused approach to China and not one that hurts American producers and consumers with tariffs.
What do you think China's reaction to what was said on Wednesday will be or has been?
I think it's dawning on the Chinese that the president has negotiated himself into a very tough spot, which is that this is the retaliation he's put on is as painful to the U.S. as it is to China, and they can wait him out. And I think that's what they're likely to do. I don't think they're going to go for a lopsided deal where the president gets to either maintain tariffs on China while the Chinese drop theirs, or where he gets to slap them on any point in the future that he would like.
So what do you think China might do, if anything, as far as retaliation is concerned?
Well, I think they've already done what they're going to do in retaliation, in terms of they directly retaliated by imposing some tariffs, and they can make life difficult for the U.S. in a number of things. They can fail to follow the lead of U.S. regulatory agencies. They can be less helpful than they might otherwise be in other international affairs. I think they'd like to strike a deal, but they're going to let President Trump squirm on this one until he either accepts something sort of modest or decides he can't take it anymore.
How are the tariffs hurting not only the United States and China, but countries around the world?
Well, I think it's setting an unfortunate precedent where we ignore global trade rules. I think one of the biggest things is you've seen you see new stresses on the World Trade Organization that will hurt everybody. You also see distortions in trade where the Chinese, for example, have offered to buy more liquid natural gas from the U.S. That may be at the expense of an alternative supplier. And those kind of distortions are going to really stress the global trading system.
Phil Levy is a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and a professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. As always, thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Well, this week marks the fifth anniversary of Russia's forceful annexation of the Ukrainian region of Crimea. The United States and its allies imposed wide-ranging sanctions on Moscow following the invasion, and analysts say the economic impact is denting approval ratings for Russian President Vladimir Putin, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
They were dubbed the Little Green Men, heavily armed fighters with anonymous uniforms who stormed military and Ukrainian government buildings in Crimea 5 years ago. The fighters were clearly backed by Russia, but Moscow denied involvement. On 16th of March 2014, the new de facto authorities staged a referendum where they claim over 95% of voters chose to return Crimea to Russian control. Russian President Vladimir Putin hailed the annexation.
After a hard, long, tiring trip, Crimea and Sevastopol are returning to their home port, to their native shore, homeward to Russia.
5 years on, Putin returned to Crimea this week and praised the progress made. New power stations have been built. A bridge links Crimea to the Russian mainland. Its limited height restricts shipping into Ukrainian ports. A rail service is due to begin this year. Crimea residents who spoke to VOA appeared supportive.
Well, it's all good. Giant construction sites everywhere. You can see that.
In the aftermath of the Crimean invasion, Putin's approval ratings soared, but they are now falling. The United States, Europe, and several allies imposed economic sanctions on Moscow. Analysts say the economic noose has tightened.
The Crimea syndrome or Crimea consensus is wearing out quite visibly. The announcement of the pension reform and the raise of the retirement age was a trigger when people began to realize, not that they hadn't realized before, but they began to feel that things were not right.
Ukraine is about to hold presidential elections. The leading candidates have pledged to continue Kiev's path toward European Union and NATO membership. So could Putin attempt further military action?
Russian politics is much exhausted with Ukraine. I definitely exclude any kind of military intervention, the closure of the Azov Sea, or, you know, military provocations in Donbass.
The United States and the European Union said this week that Crimea will always be considered part of Ukraine. But critics say the West's failure to confront Russia in 2014 led to Moscow's intervention in other conflicts, including in the Donbass region of eastern Ukraine and in Syria. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
Well, European Union leaders are meeting today for an EU summit in Brussels with a full agenda in what will be the UK's last summit before Brexit. Joining us to discuss is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, what are some of the main things members will be working on?
Quite regularly, sort of four or five times a year, the 27, sometimes 28 members of the European Union meet for these summit meetings. This particular one, the spring summit, is supposed to be very, very important because the European Union realizes that now's a time when it's got some very important matters to deal with. And in particular, when you look at what they're going to be dealing with right off the bat when they meet on Thursday, the big one is China. They're going to be looking at the trade and diplomatic relations with China. Certainly the European Union has realized that China is a key global player and that the European Union has to be on message when it comes to every aspect of their relationship with China, and that includes technological security, it includes industrial policy and competition. So they're going to be looking at that. Ukraine, 5 years on from the annexation of Crimea, the EU is going to be looking at that and having another look and questioning where its policies are. Then, of course, the very big important issue which comes up for them is in May, the European Parliament is going to have its elections again. Across Europe, there's going to be parliamentary elections. It's going to take in 27 countries. The European Union knows it's got to deal with disinformation. It knows that the protection of these elections is paramount. So they're going to be discussing it really for a very long time. They've put aside quite a long period of time during the summit to discuss the threats to the legality of these elections.
From what I'm hearing, Brexit really is now overshadowing climate talks.
Yes, indeed. This is one of the big issues, again, that the European Union has to deal with, and that's climate change. The European Union has to come up with this long-term strategy. It has to be put in place by 2020 as part of the Paris Climate Agreement. Now, this is what they're meant to be working on, and they're hoping to get to this. But Brexit, as again, starting to overshadow this, and there is this concern that this, but in particular climate change, where they go to on climate change, will be just pushed off the agenda. Now, where we're up to on Brexit is, of course, the UK Prime Minister, Theresa May, has said that she wants an extension on Brexit. She wants for the United Kingdom to be given another 3 months before it has to leave the EU. At the moment, it's due to leave on the 29th of March. But the European Council President has said, well, we'll have to see about that. The problem with all this is that it's unlikely there will be a decision at this summit about what's going to happen with Brexit. And that's because the European Union has said quite clearly they've spent the last 2 years negotiating the so-called withdrawal agreement with the United Kingdom. They're not prepared to go back and reopen that, and they will only discuss an extension of the Brexit if and when the United Kingdom Parliament agrees and ratifies that withdrawal agreement. So there's a bit of a stalemate there. But at the same time, even though in particular France is getting quite tough and saying that, you know, the UK has got to make a decision, got to see where it's going on there, the European Union doesn't want the United Kingdom to just crash out of the EU on Friday of next week. It realises that come what may, the United Kingdom is a big country. It's a big economy in Europe. It is also diplomatically and also militarily important, so they do have to come up with something. And there is already talk that we're going to be, again, in about a week's time, talking about another summit meeting, just so as they can sort out what the European Union is going to do about Brexit.
All right, that's Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Thank you for your time. World Water Day on the 22nd of March every year is about focusing attention on the importance of water. This year's theme, Leaving No One Behind, is about tackling the water crisis by addressing the reasons why billions of people are still living without safe water. Arash Arabasadi reports.
Anna Diona used to fetch water from this river in Mozambique, where people bathe and wash clothes.
Could you imagine waking up in your household and having to walk miles to get a clean glass of water? Or better yet, having to walk miles to even find a safe place to go to the restroom?
She walked 15 minutes from the steep riverbank, carrying a water jug on her head. Until a year ago, her children would brush their teeth and wash with it. Today, her children drink clean water for little money from this nearby water kiosk run by a woman and locally built.
Where there's water, everything is possible. But in reality, without water, you can't do anything. It is a complete barrier to development and good health and productivity.
Jason Brooks is senior technical advisor for water at ADVA International. Together with local communities, the nonprofit group digs wells that pump clean water to kiosks like the one in Mozambique. Brooks says projects like this one create jobs for about 7,000 people around the world.
We can't do anything without the local community and the leaders of that community who have to be responsible for maintaining access to safe water supply.
Because collecting water comes with cost.
We can start with the girl child and her inability to go to school because she has to help the parents with household chores. And fetching water is one of those. Some of these individuals are having to walk 3, 4, 5 kilometers a day, one way, just to get water. Allow that girl child to get pregnant. She becomes an even bigger victim when she has to now show up at a rural clinic where there is no water.
Aid workers say clean water is scarce in remote health clinics.
Think about all the things a hospital does with water.
There's hand washing, there's cleaning of equipment, there's cleaning of surfaces and the floors, there's drinking water. You might need to take water with your medication, so it needs to be clean.
Experts say building water infrastructure is worth the cost.
If you have money to build roads, you have money to build wells. If you have money to invest in internet, you can find money for a latrine. We just want to reprioritize investment to make sure that the needs of people are being met.
The United Nations calls the need for clean water a basic human right and proposed expanding access to all people by 2030. Until then, World Water Day is a reminder of the work ahead and the 780 million people worldwide in need of help. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Police in Cameroon have arrested four wildlife traffickers caught with huge quantities of elephant tusks and scales from pangolins. The traffickers, said to be operating across Africa, were planning to transport the scales and ivory to Asian countries through Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Francis Duranna, the highest wildlife official in Cameroon's coastal city of Douala, says the traffickers were arrested following a tip-off from residents.
Et la délégation régionale des forêts, la faune du littoral, appuyée par l'AGA et par la division.
He says the police, supported by Cameroon's Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife and conservation groups, including the last great ape, LAGA, seized scales harvested from at least 3,000 pangolins and 300 elephant tusks plucked from 150 elephants that were illegally killed. He says it is an enormous loss to biodiversity, nature, and the economy. He says he is calling on people to adhere to the fight to protect wildlife and forest resources because only traffickers benefit. Police say the men are part of an organized ring operating in parks and protected areas on Cameroon's eastern and southern borders and possibly working with accomplices in the neighboring states. Central and Eastern Africa are hotspots for poaching and trafficking pangolins, an animal also known as the scalar anteater. Boniface Dongmo, a senior wildlife control official at the Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife, says Cameroon has been implementing its anti-poaching and trafficking laws, but says the practices are difficult to stop because of the huge demand for certain animal products in Asia. In Vietnam, pangolin meat and scales can fetch up to $1,000 per kilogram. Eric Kabata, a media official for LAGA, says traffickers quite often deliver their illegal catch to Nigeria from where it is shipped to Asia, the biggest source of demand for pangolin scales and ivory. He says corrupt practices from government officials and the police is making it difficult to stop the illegal trade.
These traffickers, very top professionals, they know the mechanisms of corruption extremely well. They are international, they are young, tend to move from where the strong wildlife law enforcement to where wildlife law enforcement is not very strict. Traffickers are given lenient treatment, which is a very wrong signal.
International trade in pangolins was banned in 2016 under the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES. But the trade continues. In 2017, officials in Cameroon seized and burned more than 3 tons of pangolin skins and scales that were destined for Asia. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaounde.
Look, it's all bad, it's all real. I ride in some big tall hills, big fat checks, big large bills, run out flip like 10.
And finally, in music news, rapper, singer, songwriter Cardi B is making her film debut in an upcoming drama that will also feature Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu, among other big names. The film, titled Hustlers, is set in New York City during the financial crisis, and it tells the story of a group of exotic dancers who form a band and seek revenge on their male Wall Street customers by scamming them out of thousands of dollars. Cardi B has earned 3 number one singles on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. Baby mommy with a clip. Walk out bodies with a... Bring a thotty to the whip. And she fine or she thick. Damn, walking past the mirror. Woo! Let up, try me, boom, boom, hammer time, I was born to flex, yes. Diamonds on my neck, I like boarding jets, I like money, but nothing in this world that I like more than checks, money, all I really wanna see is the money, I don't really need to be any the money, all I back need is the money, I got bands in the coupe, busting out the roof, I got bands in the coupe, touch me out, bow, shake it low, you get a little bag and take it to the store. Money. Get a little cash. Money. You shake it real fast, you get a little more. Money. I got bands in the coop. Bustin' out the coop. I got bands in the coop. Touch me out. Yo, Papa, you pop. Pop. Papa, whoever. You know who popped the most. The people who shit not together. Okay. You know that Cardi or free. All my pajamas is leather. So black on your ass. Wakanda forever, sweet like a honey bun, spit like a tummy gun, roll your 101, come get your mommy some Cardi, yep, tip top, kiss the ring and kick rock, sis, jump it down, back it up, ooh, ayy, make that 2K, I like my birds like Deuce, he gonna eat this like soup, I was born to flex, diamonds on my neck, I like boarding jets, I like money, but nothing in this world that I like more than culture, all I really wanna see is the money, I don't really need to be any the money. All I back need is a KC.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA.